Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you Tuesday morning, June the 29th, 2021. 16 coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, and it is the time of the Marion County Fair. And again, I want to thank the Y-Men yesterday for calling in during the show and delivering 6 passes to the Marion County Fair, which we will give away starting tomorrow morning. So stay tuned for that. Coming up later on in the week, Democratic candidate for governor Nan Whaley will be with us Thursday morning at 8:15, and some other surprises as we head into July 4th weekend, which is on Sunday. And by the way, I did misquote this yesterday. I am not a fair person. I was never in 4-H. I've been to the fair, but there will not be fireworks on the 4th of July. The Marion County fireworks will be on the 3rd of July. When the 4th is on a Sunday, the fireworks are on Saturday. So the fireworks will be on Saturday, and the fair will run for 6 days and be over on Saturday. So that's a correction I wanted to make from yesterday's show. Now, for the full 2 hours this morning, I said that we were going to have a special guest, and this is important because we are still in a pandemic. I don't know if it's the middle or the end or what it is, but we are still in this pandemic of COVID-19, and this morning, we're just going to go and talk about a personal side of this pandemic, not doctors, politicians, a local Marion person who has dealt with this in an interesting way. I don't want to say anything more than that. I'll let her tell her story, and we'll just talk for the next couple hours, and hopefully, no matter what you believe about this, this will be interesting and informative and educational for you to hear somebody's personal experience with COVID-19. And also, we'll talk about this person's life in Marion, because that's important, too, to get background. Our guest this morning for 2 hours is Brandy Hobart. Brandy, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So glad to have you in the studio this morning. I thought, for people who don't know, we'll get a little background to start off. Tell us where you were born, your childhood. Just give us the background.
All right. Well, I am born and raised in Marion. My childhood, you know, I grew up, I went to Marion City Schools, so Marion girl through and through. My kids obviously live here now, so we're keeping it here.
Now, when you were growing up, what did you want to be?
When I was growing up, let's see, I originally thought I would like to do theater. But then realized that I have a real problem with, like, rejection and talking in front of people. So I thought maybe that wasn't the way to go. And I have a long history of educators on my mom's side of the family. And so I was pretty passionate about that and ended up going into education, and now I work for Marion City Schools.
I believe your mom was a third grade teacher when I was in school.
Oh, yeah.
At the school I went to.
At Fair Park?
Fair Park.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then that was, yeah.
I wasn't in her class, but she was there. I do remember her.
Yeah. She was there for a long time.
How's she doing?
She's doing very well. She's still teaching. She's getting ready to go into her last year.
So, really?
Yeah, she's about to retire.
Any mixed feelings about that?
For her?
Yeah.
Nope. I don't think there are. I think she'll miss the people and the kids. But I think she's ready, especially after this crazy year we've had.
Teaching, what has that meant to you? There's always a lot of talk about education. What does it mean to you, the years you've done it?
For me, I just think it's such an opportunity that we have to work with the you know, some of the youngest generation and build them up, provide opportunities and knowledge to them that they'll carry with them forever. So I think that's really special.
Why do you think schools in general, and it's all over the country, get a bad rep?
To be honest, I think being in it, I have a hard time understanding that perspective. I don't know, because I think the work we do is so important. And I don't know if it's political or what it ends up being. I think there's a stigma behind teachers having the summers off, which I can assure you is not the case. I don't know, because like I said, I think it's so important what we do, and there really should be more respect for it.
Being an educator, what was the pandemic in education like?
It was, I can't think of anything to compare it to. It was absolutely wild walking into a classroom and seeing half the number of students you're used to seeing in a packed room, seeing kids walk around with masks. It was surreal. It was something out of a sci-fi movie almost. I'm thinking especially back to last spring, it really showed how our teachers were able to pivot so unexpectedly, and they started working from home. They started integrating technology in a way that they had never had to do before. They started collaborating in a way that they had not had to do. And it continued as we went back into school, trying to teach students on a daily basis in the class, but only seeing them half the time. It has been an eye-opening, super unique experience that I'm really hoping we've learned from, and we're going to move forward and not forget what we've learned through that.
The irony of it, and I think there was about 24 hours preparation for the school's closing.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you know, now we think about it and we think, oh yeah, but at that time, people really still did not understand what was going on, and there still was talk, well, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll be back in 3 weeks. And it was a Friday the 13th, March 13th, 2020. What did you think when that came down from the governor? Did you think, well, we'll be back in 2 weeks?
I absolutely thought that. I do, I'm not actually in the classroom anymore. I do technology integration, so a lot for me was thinking about, okay, what are our next steps? Because how much, you know, what are we going to need to do for our students to make sure they're prepared? Because for 2 weeks, we can get some materials ready. But beyond that, how do we make sure kids have what they need to be able to be successful in this environment? Because a lot of our students just didn't have the technology at home to be able to do it.
On the level, how do you think it worked out?
I think it was very difficult. I think everybody did the best they could. Parents were in a completely new situation trying to educate their students and support them in a way that they hadn't had to before. Teachers were trying to educate in a way they had never had to do before. And I think everybody did the best that they could in the situation they were handed with such short notice.
What are the long-lasting effects of this?
I think that remains to be seen. What I think has happened is our community has seen how the teachers were able to pull together and get done for our students what we needed to get done, how the school system was able to provide the resources. So hopefully those are some positives. Students were able to, you know, we had some students who really were able to pick it up and show their work ethic in an unstructured situation. And I I'm hoping there are some positives we're going to be able to take out of this, because I know people are concerned about the long-term educational effects that this has had on students, but I think that remains to be seen.
There seems to be two schools of thought coming out of this. The one school of thought is, boy, we now realize how important it is to be in the building. And then the other school of thought is, now we know that we don't have to be in the building. We can do it this way. What do you think?
I think it is important to be in the building. I think we've learned that actually there are some situations and some students who may do better not in the building. But I think we've learned that we can be resourceful and we can provide to our families and students what they need. And that, you know, I'm really proud of the way we were able to be a support in that way.
People come in, and I've been in radio a little while now, and I've seen this over the years, as texting has come in and social media has come in, it's not that people can't talk, they can't conversate.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we're doing now is very difficult for a 20-year-old now. Because they grew up in a world where they could text, where they could email, where they could Facebook, and they just don't have to do this. They don't have to use a whole lot of words. When this pandemic came about, I thought, boy, now we're really on the slippery slope down this no communication, no face-to-face type of thing. Have you seen this over the years?
I think so. Here's what, and this was kind of interesting to me as a parent. So before the pandemic, I was very, and this is interesting also for a technology person, but I was very hesitant with technology with my own kids because of things like that. You know, I wanted them to have experience. But I think we all got to a point, and I listened to a podcast about it, which kind of made me feel better, that we all got to a point where it was like, this has to be a tool that we're using, and the kids have to know how to use it and how to use it responsibly. But I have found that there are some days where it's just, I need you to be on a device. Like, I'm sorry that I can't be right there with you, but you know, this is what I have to have you doing right now, and I really hope that we've taught them how to use those responsibly and in moderation.
Being a Marion girl, Marion City Schools?
Yes.
Okay. If this had happened in 1995, when you were in school, what do you think it would have been? Did this make it better before, after internet, obviously, or would it have been far worse?
I can't even imagine how that would work. There would have been a lot more paper and pencil, obviously, but there would have been no FaceTime with teachers at all. That would have, I think that would have definitely been a much harder situation. The kids were able to have some support from teachers through the pandemic because Zoom was a thing and Google Meet. We were able to set up those experiences with students where they still had the teacher to be able to support them through what they were dealing with and through their instruction.
A lot of people feel schools are a safe haven for kids. They come there, they get meals, they see an adult that maybe is not in their own life, who's a good role model. What do you think effect that has had, not being around those people, not being able to go into the building and get those lunches? I know lunches were delivered on buses, but what effect has that had over the last 9 months?
I think it's impacted some students more than others. I think it's impacted everybody to an extent. But some of our students really rely on those relationships. And, you know, even my kids who come from, you know, a secure background, those are important relationships to have somebody who they know, you know, outside the family, who just cares about them and cares about their future. So for that to be taken away from anybody would be difficult. And like I said, especially some of our students who really rely on that, it was very difficult to know that we were, not that we were taking it away, but that was being taken away from them.
When we were in school, or when I was in school, I remember the teachers, now maybe it's just perspective, but were mostly women. They were mostly older women, and they seemed to have a different philosophy on life. When you walk into a school now, the thing that surprises me is it's women in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, men too. Now, there are a lot more men than I used to see, and they certainly dress different than those women did in those days. And I hear people comment on this a lot, that a school building is a lot different, the makeup. What happened to all those women who went away? And is it a different atmosphere now?
I would say it is a different atmosphere. Being on this side, being an educator rather than a student now, I guess maybe I have a little bit of a different perspective growing up with my mom as a teacher. I was able to go into the schools and see kind of the looser side of teachers, that they weren't all, you know, the button up. You know, they did have a good sense of humor. But I think one of the things that has happened now is we've started focusing a lot more on relationships and the importance of leadership and relationships, and not just instruction and you know, just constantly giving information and memorization, and really giving students experiences. I think we've changed the way we're educating.
Being a Marion resident, working in the school system, being here your entire life, we're hard on ourselves in Marion a lot of times. You know, you can go to Upper Sandusky, you can go to Delaware, you can go to Bucyrus. They don't seem to have this issue that we have, where if something goes wrong, we go, oh, that's Marion. You hear that. What do you make of that, being a Marion person? What is that about here that persists and has persisted for about the last 20 years?
I'm not sure what happened, but I can definitely see it. It used to be Marion was a place people wanted to come, and now it seems like a place people are fleeing from to a certain extent. I do think we have some individuals in the community, though, who are doing a phenomenal job of trying to bring things back. The things that are being done in the downtown right now, I'm just so impressed by what is being done and what they're, and some of the businesses that are coming in, and that we've seen it through the pandemic, that, you know, we still have businesses that are able to thrive, and so I think we're seeing good things happen. Hopefully we're seeing a turnaround here.
Aside from what we're going to talk about here momentarily, how has the pandemic affected you as a person?
So I think the good news for me was that I'm not a particularly extroverted person. I am okay being in my own space and being alone. Not that I'm ever alone with my kiddos, but I don't have to have the kind of social interaction on a constant basis that other people need. And so for me, while it was an adjustment in the beginning, there were things that I was actually more comfortable with that I enjoyed. I didn't mind working from home, for instance. But after a while, I think it wears on anybody, that there are just people you can't be around and you can't see, and that you're you're constantly, if you do see them, you're 6 feet away from them. It was bizarre, and I think it does lead to a certain amount, and I think we're going to continue to see it, just the depression and anxiety that's been caused nationwide. I think that even for people like me who were more comfortable, it does start to affect you.
Being a young single person, we've seen the advent of online dating. This has become a gigantic thing. There was a time when this was thought of as nuts. I remember when I first got in radio, a couple who met online came in that got married, and we were all looking at them like they were insane. But now, hey, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
But people do still go to bars. People do still go to restaurants. Is that harder now? I'm not sure that you ever did that, but is it harder now in the world we live in?
I'm going to say, well, I think online dating is very difficult anyway. However, through this pandemic, my mom was online dating, and she actually met the man who, you know, they're in a relationship now. So it's possible, you know, and it does work out for the best for some people.
When you heard that, did you say, oh, this is not good? In the beginning, before you knew the person.
Well, I had done some online dating first, so I kind of knew some of the background and, you know, some of the, you know, what to be careful for. I'm not going to lie. Like, those first couple dates, I tracked my mom's phone. Every 15 minutes, I was watching. But there are precautions that you can take. I don't think it's that much different than meeting a stranger in a bar, really.
You know, this is interesting technology-wise. Does the kid become the parent, even though the parent is still working, fully cognizant, can live their own life, but do you have to have a conversation with mom and say, listen, I'm going to track your phone, and this is what's going to happen? Or does she ask you to do this?
So it was actually very funny because I talked to her and I said, you know, I think I would feel more comfortable tracking your phone. And she was like, oh, no, you know, I've been talking to this guy for a while. I think it's okay. And I was like, I was like, okay. And then I thought about it some more. I'm like, you know, I really think I'd be more comfortable. And she was like, look, we know what we're going to do. Here's where we're going to be. You know, it's going to be okay. And I'm like, okay, but kidnappers don't actually follow your itinerary. So, like, I just think maybe I need to, I need to track your phone. And she was okay. I don't know if she's listening right now, but I still track her phone.
You know, oh, really?
Yeah.
This is good. You know, that's the line of the morning. Kidnappers don't follow your itinerary. People should pay attention to that. That's a good Facebook post. In the whole thing, there were marriages that happened during this. When you couldn't get people together and you couldn't have receptions, I think you probably can now, but in those days you couldn't. Do you think people thought the world was going to end and if we were engaged or we were dating, we've got to speed this thing up because here, oh my goodness, look what can happen?
I'm sure that there were people who thought about that, and there were, you know, things that happened. I'm going to go back to my mom. You know, they kind of had at one point, she said, you know, I just realized life is short and we're going to enjoy it. So, you know, that's, and I don't think that's a bad thing to remember.
Where does that line get drawn? Just in the everybody's life. Everybody has to answer this question at some point. Life is short. We have to enjoy it. But sometimes life is long. And you don't want to make a mistake that's going to be hard to reverse. How do you live your life?
I hope I live my life responsibly. How's that? because I do think it has to be a mixture. I think there has to be some safety and thoughtfulness, but you can't allow it to prevent you from enjoying it.
Do want to let people know Brandy's going to be with us for the full 2 hours this morning, 41 minutes past the hour right now. We're going to get into this now, but I know we're not going to be able to finish it in the next 19 minutes, so we are going to break at the top of the hour, and we'll come back and continue on with this after 9 o'clock. But your father, now, just tell us about your father. What kind of guy was he as you were growing up, Patrick? Mm-hmm. Just tell us about him.
So my dad was like me, Marion, born and raised. He grew up and pretty much stayed on the West End most of his life, only living outside of Marion for a very short time. So he was a guy involved in a lot of different things. He was Marion Baseball for Youth. In high school, he was into sports. He worked as a corrections officer, so he knew a lot of people. So he was the guy who, like, if you were out in public, you couldn't walk through a store without seeing 9 people he knew, and he was a talker. So whether you wanted to or not, you were going to be stopping and talking to several people. And he was just a very open guy. So he didn't know a stranger and could carry on a conversation. He was also the guy who, if you needed something, he was the guy to call. If you were moving and you needed help, or if you were having car problems and you needed help, there was never a question on whether or not he'd be willing to do that. Even sometimes with strangers, like, I believe I heard a story where he had picked up somebody on the side of the road who was having some car issues, and, you know, as upset as my stepmother was with him, you know, that was just who he was. He wanted to be there to help people, and he had a Superman tattoo on his chest. All of his stuff was Superman, and he truly was for us. He was our Superman.
Mother's son's father's daughter. What was that like?
I think we had, we definitely had our struggles through the years. I think all parents and kids do. And we had some pretty good arguments and things like that, but I think as we both grew up through the years, we got to a very good and trusting place where we just really enjoyed each other.
What were the last 10 years like? You're an adult, he's an adult. What was that like?
It really changed the dynamic when I became a mom and he became a grandparent, kind of getting to see a different, fun side of him. He went from being, you know, just a dad and a stepdad, to literally overnight having 4 granddaughters. So I had triplets and my sister had her daughter overnight, and he was just so delighted to be up. We called him Papa. You know, he wanted to be there for everybody. I was in Columbus, she was in Marion, and so he was, you know, traveling back and forth to try and be with everybody. And then we both had boys, so that was where he was. Those were his boys. That was pretty special to get to watch him roughhouse with the boys, and just how much they loved him, because he was that fun papaw that all the kids like.
In people's lives, and this is good for everybody listening because it happens. Divorce happens. Sure. Divorce happened with your parents. How did you get through it?
Well, I was, I want to say 3 or 4. So I was very young. So it was pretty much all that I knew and remembered. It was difficult when I was younger to then have to share him as he, you know, got into relationships. But, and we did, you know, have a rough time when I was younger, which led to some difficulty when my stepmom got together. I had some real I had some trust issues, and but he picked a really good person to bring into my life, and I've been very lucky to have her and my sisters enter my life and just be my family now.
As you're growing up, what is this? Is it a friendship? Does it become a friendship when your parents are adults and now you're an adult? Or is it still dad looking out for you, don't do this? If you were to online date, would dad be there saying, whoa?
To a certain extent, I think. I mean, he would want me to be happy and do what makes me happy, but careful. I think it's a mix of a friendship and still knowing that he was somebody who I could lean on and I knew would be there for me. I actually just last fall, I was suddenly having a car issue at like 10 o'clock at night, and that was my first thought, call dad, he'll help me figure it out. And I called him, and as soon as he picked up the phone, I was like, oh, this is a tired man right now. But I said, okay, so here's the sound my car is making. I don't know what's going on. I'm out, you know, at OSUM, and I don't know what to do. And he was like, all right, I'll be there. And that was just his attitude about anything, anytime. It was, all right, I'll be there. You know, no questions, just he was there for you.
Do you ever see your parents as getting older? Or are they still always mom and dad?
So I do, I mean, I do see them getting older. I don't know that I ever saw my dad really grow up fully. He's still very much the fun-loving, goofy, mildly inappropriate, like, you know, and semi-immature person that I think he was for a long time, but with a different world view that really calmed him as he got older. So I could definitely see that happening. My mom is still the person I go, like, I still ask her permission for things, so she's, you know, mom forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Last, I guess it would have been winter, right before spring, we start to hear about this thing called the pandemic. It's COVID-19. In March and April, when the shutdown is going on, as you said earlier with your mom, that you kind of become a parent, in a way, to your parents. At that point, what was your feeling? Your parents are older. They're close or in that risk kind of category for COVID-19 that we all were hearing. In the early days of it, what was the thought?
My thought, I actually, it took me a little bit longer to get on board with it, that I was like, okay, I've heard of this, but is it that serious? Like, my dad was on board right away. Like, he called me, he's like, do you know anybody making masks? And so he was on board immediately that this was a serious thing, but he worked in the healthcare industry, so he saw that other side of it. But you know, my parents were actually, though, young when they had me, 19, 20, so while they were getting close to that risk category, they weren't in the super high risk category. So I took it pretty seriously for my grandparents, but I wasn't really worried about my parents.
as summer came and things started to open back up, and we go into the fall, and we start to hear rumblings about this spike, is what they called it. How were things as fall sports came back under restrictions? People did try to go back to school with altered schedules and days. What was the period of September, October, November like?
I think it had gotten, if it was hard to take it seriously in the beginning when it didn't seem that prevalent, but because of the way it was being treated, in some cases it was hard to take it seriously, then it was very difficult then in the fall to get into that mindset where, no, this is pretty serious and the numbers are really going up. So to see things opening at that point, I think it was confusing to know how seriously should I be taking this. If kids are allowed to, you know, be playing sports and things, you know, do we really need to stay away from, you know, restaurants? It was hard to figure that out, I guess.
The mask mandate came in, I believe, in late July last year. How, your dad working in the healthcare industry, how was he adapting to this?
He was good. Like I said, he was the first one to call me about, you know, who do you know making masks. Then he got his N95 at work. So he was good there. Actually, for Father's Day last year, I got him a little bobblehead that was a custom-made one. So I'd send his picture in, looked just like him, and I made it. The body was Superman. So he had this little bobblehead that he loved it. He took it to work, and he even made a little mask for his bobblehead that it wore at work in a shield. So he was very safety conscious when it came to masks.
As far as his health goes, any big health concerns at any point during his life?
No, he was incredibly healthy, with the exception of the fall before, when he was playing ball. He was a big baseball player, and he was playing softball, and he got hit in the leg twice in the same spot, and he ended up, I thought he was going to lose his leg because it became so infected, but he made it through that, and he was okay. That was really the only time he ever really was, you know, hospitalized, and really in that situation he wasn't hospitalized, but that was the only issue I recall him having.
There is a narrative that the only people who don't make it through this either have pre-existing conditions or are very elderly. Mm-hmm. This doesn't seem to be the case.
Correct. I mean, I think that there are people who do feel safe because they say, I'm not in a high-risk category. So, you know, these rules and these mandates and things shouldn't apply to me because I'm safe. And unfortunately, it's just not necessarily true.
We've got about 5 minutes left, and we're going to save the second hour, and we're going to get into exactly what happened, so stay tuned. But there was a picture, and it was a perfectly healthy guy. I believe it was the last picture taken before entrance into a hospital or any. Tell us about that day. And when was that?
So that would have been the Wednesday before Dad started running a fever. They actually stopped by my house, and it was my dad and my stepmom, Robin, and they were going out to dinner. and they went to their favorite spot, which, well, I think it's her favorite spot, which is El Campo, and he went because he knew she liked it. And so they were, she was sitting across the table from him, and she said he just looked so handsome that she had to snap a picture. And so she took that picture, and that was their last night out.
What does that picture mean to you now?
I like to know that he had that opportunity, that they had that opportunity to go out and have a fun night.
When you posted that, I believe that was in the throes of the illness. What did that mean to you at that time to show people that?
I thought it was important because I knew that I felt that it wasn't being taken very seriously. Like we talked about, that people felt safe. If they didn't have certain risk factors, they felt like they were going to be okay. And to show them that, there's no way to know how you are going to react to this virus.
At that point, what were the holidays? Well, Halloween. What were those occasions like where you would have a grandfather with little kids? Thanksgiving. What were those like last year?
Well, last year was a little crazy because of the pandemic, but it was, you know. In times past, I mean, Dad was always there. So when we got to the point where the pandemic had hit, and those occasions came up, it was very difficult to not have everyone together. And that was Dad's element, being around his family and telling stories and things like that. So it was weird to go through those days without being able to be around people.
Prior to November and December of last year, if you could go back and know what you know now, what was going to happen, were you in the moment? Do you wish you would have been in the moment more? Nobody could know.
I think you always feel like that. I think there's always going to be that feeling that I wish I would have done that differently. I wish I would have paid more attention. I wish I would have had this conversation or that conversation or said, you know, whatever thing that I feel like I just didn't say enough. But I think it's important that he knew how much he was loved, and I know he knew that, so.
When you look back at it, the last well times, are there any regrets?
Not from recent years. I think we got to a good place, where there had been some turmoil, as there is with any parent-child relationship. We had had the time we needed to get past that and, have a much more adult relationship.
We are going to come back with Brandy Hobart. I always want to say Hobart. I don't know why. Hobart. Brandy Hobart. And we're going to come back in about 15 minutes. So go get some breakfast. Go get some coffee. And we're going to talk about what happened late last year. So stay tuned here to WWGH Radio. Be back in about 15.
107.1 LP, Marion, Ohio. The place to talk. From legendary comedian Abe Vigoda.
You know, Abe, there's been this thing for years that people thought you were dead. Do you think that has worked against you in your career?
Well, I wasn't that crazy about it, but I accepted it. That's what it was. People thought I was dead. And I would walk into a Bloomingdale's department store. The salesman said, "You know, you look like the late Abe Vigoda." I said, "Yeah, really? Well,